What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepetecallinershow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT, 704-570-1110. 1-800-WBT-1110. Pete Callender here, but you knew that. And the email is pete@thepetecallinershow.com. And on Twitter, it's @PeteCallender. And you can get the podcast at The Pete Callender Show and at WBT.com. Okay. And on any of your favorite podcasting platforms. I am everywhere. Except here, actually, on Thursday after 1:30. I have an abbreviated program because of the basketballing. So I don't know who's playing. I'm guessing it's the Tar Heels, maybe?
Yep, it'll be UNC versus the winner of tonight's game between Wagner and Howard.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's like, I mean, I was just throwing it out there like a guess because we're the Tar Heel flagship. So it's like, just assume. You've exhausted, after I figured out it was the Tar Heels, you've exhausted like my interest. No, I'm kidding. No, I do actually follow this. I do follow some of the, I will say not so much anymore. I've just kind of, I don't know. I just don't follow a lot of the basketball, anymore. Hey, Mr. Wonderful's on Fox News again. He was on CNN. He got yelled at yesterday. It's Kevin O'Leary from Shark Tank. Anyway, I called it Free Speech Tuesday. Because yesterday, free speech was on trial at the U.S. Supreme Court. It was. Kind of. But yeah. Murphy versus Missouri. And we had some real nuggets of wisdom that came from Justice KBJ, Ketanji Brown Jackson, who said, quote, "My biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods." To which I respond, yes, indeed. That is, in fact, the purpose of the First Amendment. It is the purpose of the Second and the Third and the Fourth and the Fifth and the Sixth and the Seventh and the Eighth and the Ninth and the Tenth and a couple of the others after that. The whole point is to tell the government, no, you can't do that, right? All of these rights are reserved for the people and the states. You don't get to do this thing. It is the preservation and protection of individual rights. That's what the First Amendment does. And so it does, in fact, hamstring the government in significant ways. Yes, even in, quote, the most important time periods, which, let's be honest, sometimes could be a bit subjective. What's amazing to me, and this is why I had such lamentations over the way the primary unfolded before we even really got a chance to weigh in on it at the presidential level, which is that a rematch, the geriatric rematch that we are now going to have, means that there is never going to be an accounting for the COVID response because both of the candidates were too invested in that response. And if you doubt me, go throw something up on social media. Go throw up a tweet or a Facebook post and suggest that, you know, hey, maybe there should be an accounting on the other side of the ledger about the costs of COVID and the response. See, because we all heard during the pandemic and during the daily news conferences, all we heard from the people that were making these really tough decisions and, we, you know, this is all new territory. You know, we're going by the science and data that the clerics are telling us. And, you know, we're issuing these incantations to ward off the COVID, which was the smartest virus ever to have plagued the planet. It knew things like when you were sitting down, when you were standing up in a restaurant. It knew if you were standing still or walking to the restroom. It knew if you were, you know, gathering for a protest for social justice or gathering outside for a funeral. It knew these things, right? So the people who are making all of the decisions about how to respond to this smartest virus ever, they apparently made the right call every time. It's truly amazing. They batted 1,000. I'm as surprised as you. I mean, usually when you have a brand new virus, nobody really knows what's happening. You should expect there to be some, you know, bad decisions, some mistakes were made. But no, apparently we never had a bad decision, never had any mistakes made. And if you doubt me, go post that up on Facebook. Go post it on social media or Snapchat or Instagram or whatever. You put it on your favorite social media platform and you too will be met with what I have been met with, which is the protestations that of course we did everything correctly because all of these people were dying and kids could transmit the virus. They killed all of these teachers in New York City. These people believe this stuff. So wait a minute. So you're saying that because teachers died in New York City, that was the reason to shut the schools down all over the country, even though those teachers probably got COVID from someplace else or from adults because the kids don't have the ACE receptors and all that stuff. Like they were not vectors of transmission. The children were not. The younger kids were not. But there are still people who believe they were, and these are the people I guess that still wear the masks. I don't know. So this, I guess, would be one of that would have been one of the times, the most important time period that Ketanji Brown Jackson says the government might need to, might need to get around the First Amendment. And the First Amendment might hamstring the government and government officials during one of these important time periods like the pandemic. So you can't talk about things like where the virus may have come from during an important time period. Up next, we're going to talk to Gary Lukowski. He is with the Dillon Law Group. This is Harmeet Dillon's law group. He will join us to talk about this case. All right. Well, just as I predicted, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in North Carolina. The wait is over. Now you can legally bet on all of your favorite sports anytime, anywhere in the state with DraftKings, an official sports betting partner of NASCAR. DraftKings has tons of the best features like parlays for multiple games, player props that focus on individual players and their performance within a specific game, social betting groups where you can share your bets with your friends in real time, and just in time for college basketball conference tournaments now underway. And as always, fast and easy payouts, and I have a special promo for you. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use the code word Pete and bet $5 to get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook, promo code Pete. The crown is yours, but this is a limited time offer. Gambling problem, call 877-718-5543 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Oh, and deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms are at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. And NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and is used under license. I want to welcome to the program Gary Lukowski. He is a partner at the Dillon Law Group, and you can look up his firm there at DHILLON Law, DillonLaw.com. Gary, welcome to the program, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Certainly, certainly. So tell us, what is the core issue in the Murphy versus Missouri case that the Supreme Court heard oral arguments on yesterday?
So the core issue is, what can government do to pressure social media companies to censor information or to kind of block information that they think is harmful? And there are a few sort of nerdy legal issues wrapped up there around issues like standing and injury and how that's traceable. But the core issue is, what can government tell social media companies about what they want said on those platforms?
All right. So you said standing, and I'm always looking or trying to keep an eye out for escape hatches that the Supreme Court will use to avoid addressing a major issue. And so, is this one of the escape hatches, or do you identify any?
It's a potential one. It's something that the court kind of raised in the question presented and that came up at oral argument. So issues such as standing and kind of whether the potential injury is traceable are both things that are potentially going to come up in this. They could be escape hatches. It's unclear if the court will go that direction, though. There's certainly a lot of discussion about the substance as well.
Right, and so this is the case was brought by Republican attorneys general. It went through the U.S. District Court for the Western District of Louisiana, where the judge, Terry Doughty, I believe is how he pronounces it, he wrote this this big 155-page memo and said, look, like government is directing internet censorship. This goes beyond, I guess the term is jawboning, right, where you just kind of, you know, if you're the president or something, you just kind of apply public pressure to business leaders or labor leaders or something to get them to do what you want them to do. But this, in this one judge's opinion, it went beyond just jawboning. Is that accurate?
Yes. Yeah, and it's a scathing indictment kind of how the government's been interacting with these different social media companies and how kind of directly involved they've been in saying, here's what can and cannot be said on the platform, particularly during COVID and a couple other issues.
Right. And so, like the Hunter Biden laptop story was a big one, too, right, where they said, oh, that's, you know, misinformation, and they got it all shut down. I saw the Politico article, and they're not exact. They say, you know, there's no direct evidence. There's no smoking gun, like an email that is, I guess, from Joe Biden to, you know, Mark Zuckerberg that says, take down this guy's post, right? It does. There's nothing like that. And so we have to kind of divine the orders or the pressure. We have to kind of like assume that this pressure was being exerted in the few correspondence that we do see. Do you think that is what we've seen has been sufficient?
I think it has. I think it has to kind of make the public case that, look, this is what the government's been doing, and that certainly from, you know, first principles of what free speech should mean, that's an inappropriate role for government. Whether that rises to the level that will be enough in a court of law, obviously the Western District of Louisiana thought so. The Fifth Circuit thought there was enough to keep that injunction in place. We'll see if the Supreme Court agrees.
So, all right, so how does this go badly? Let me ask it that way. What is this? If we see a ruling come down from the Supreme Court, how in your mind does this turn out badly for Americans, for the browser or the applications, right? Facebook and Instagram, whatever. Worst case scenario?
Worst case scenario would be something along the lines of an opinion that says, unless the government is directly threatening you, it doesn't count as coercion. Mm. So they can say all this stuff. They can kind of intimate that, hey, it'd be really good if you do this, even against the background of considering regulatory actions. But as long as they don't come out and say, do this or else, you know, X, Y, and Z bad thing will happen to you, it's fine. I think that's probably kind of the worst case scenario for the American people, because it leaves open a lot of avenues for government to exert this pressure behind the scenes where they're doing all these things and saying, no, if you don't do X, Y, and Z, people are going to die. If you don't do X, Y, and Z, it'll be bad for everybody. But then as long as they're not then attaching the kind of or else, you know, I look at it as kind of the Tony Soprano model, right?
Right.
You know, you don't come out and say, do what I say or I'm going to burn down your store, but you say, hey, that's a nice store you've got there.
Shame if anything happens to it.
Shame if something happens. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
But I think that's the worst case scenario, is something that says, hey, you can get away with that going kind of that far close to the line.
Well, and to your point, there was a March 2021 email to a Facebook official from a senior Biden administration COVID advisor named Andy Slavitt, who said, according to Politico, that Facebook was foot-dragging and its lack of candor on the part of Facebook in its efforts to tackle COVID-related content. The federal officials considered that to be dangerous, and they said, you're hiding the ball. We have urgency and don't sense it from you. Internally, we have been considering our options on what to do about it, which I think very much is a Tony Soprano kind of approach. To Facebook at the time.
I think so. It'll be interesting to see where the court comes down on that. But I certainly think that the way they were interacting with these companies goes beyond just, you know, a typical, hey, that's not an accurate story. It'd be better if you didn't run that story when you're talking to traditional press outlets. It seems much more like they're directing them to do things, and this is happening against the background. Or if you remember the last few years, we've had these discussions about Section 230, about antitrust, and about these other kind of regulatory avenues. So it's happening against this background of, hey, I'm not explicitly saying that there's all these other things, but, you know, I'm asking you to do something, I'm telling you it'd be good for you, and you have to be aware that this stuff is happening.
So how is this different than in, you know, like an example or an analogy would be like a, you know, reporters working on a story and the government's like, oh, you're going to burn a bunch of sources, you're going to, you know, jeopardize people's lives, please don't run that. Like, is that different in your mind?
In my mind, yes, although it's interesting. That is something that came up a number of times, and I think that that's going to be an area that's going to be interesting to see where the justices come down. A couple of them brought that up in discussion and along the lines of, well, you know, government does this type of thing all the time with stories they don't like, with the New York Times or with other traditional press outlets. They say, hey, you've got that wrong. That's going to be bad. That's dangerous. We don't want that information out there. One thing, though, I think is very different is they're trying to stop sort of third parties from talking this way. So it's one thing if you go to a press outlet and say, hey, I don't want you to, you know, you should not say X, Y, and Z. It's a little different, though, where you're going and saying, say you're going to Twitter and saying, Gary should not say X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
It's not really Twitter's speech. It's my speech in that scenario. I think that's what makes it a little different from some of the more traditional media-type conversations. And that's what makes kind of the regulatory regime a little different, too, is, you know, these social media companies insist, hey, it's not really our speech. It's the individuals when it comes to purposes of liability, when it comes to Section 230. But then when it comes to these sorts of scenarios, they're saying, oh, well, it's ours and it's our editorial discretion. There's a little bit of a tension there.
Yeah. Last question. I asked you worst case. What's the best case, do you think, best case scenario as for outcomes?
I mean, best case, I think, would be a ringing endorsement of First Amendment principles, something that says, you know, a bridge means a bridge. It doesn't mean you have to go so far as to say, as to have a clear threat. It's anything that kind of suppresses speech and it's intended to suppress speech.
All right, Gary Lukowski, and I hope did I pronounce that correctly? I'm sorry, I should have asked you first. Okay, I did. By the way, did you know you were going to be a lawyer with the law in your last name already? Did you know that?
I always say I was born for this.
That's good. There you go. Gary Lukowski with the Dillon Law Group. I appreciate your time. Thanks so much for sharing it with us.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Take care. All right. Do the current world events have you wondering whether we are teetering on the edge of catastrophe? Are you concerned it's going to reach our shores? Okay. So what are you doing about your concerns? Let me help. Carolina Readiness Supply. At CarolinaReadiness.com, whether you're looking to expand your emergency preparedness supplies or you have no idea where to even begin, Carolina Readiness Supply can help you. Food, water purifiers, tools, first aid kits, instructional materials, camping and hiking supplies even, because being prepared is just smart. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies and educational materials that you'll need for any kind of emergency. In Waynesville and always at CarolinaReadiness.com, veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out? Email is Pete at thepetecallinershow.com. You can also hit me up on the Twitter machine at Pete Calliner. Here's a message from Joseph. Just a heads up. Joseph is a bit of a pessimistic. I love you, Joe, but you're kind of a downer, man. Sometimes here, listen for yourself. Here's Joseph's email. He says, even if the Supreme Court rules completely in favor of the states against the Biden administration, what's going to stop the bureaucrats from still censoring through their contacts and back channels that they have in these companies? After all, numerous social media employees used to be government bureaucrats and vice versa. None of our institutions work anymore, so getting hyped about any case is kind of hard. The college loan forgiveness scheme showed that the system does what it wants, and the Constitution be damned. That's why when a conservative quotes laws or constitutional amendments to me, I just roll my eyes. It's so sad that they still want to believe. I do. I don't find it to be sad. That's hope, man. That's hope, because otherwise, what's the point? Like, what are you doing then, you know? What's the reason for continuing on if all is lost already? You know? I don't believe all is lost. Here, and actually, hang on a second. A federal judge. Okay, let me back up. At UC Berkeley 2017, I'm old enough to remember those heady days. Antifa, remember? Orange Man Bad. They were going around beating up Proud Boys and such. Their Black Bloc franchisees set fires and rioted at UC Berkeley. Why? Why would you do that at UC Berkeley? That is not a hotbed of conservatism. Well, they had booked Milo Yiannopoulos. He was going to go speak on campus. I think that's how he pronounces that. And so the anti-free speech violent protesters set off munitions, broke windows, beat people, and scared the university away from allowing any right-wing speakers to be heard on campus, unless they paid for their own security. Antifa radicals calling themselves by any means necessary, which is kind of threatening, right? Because any means, it's one of those things where like, no justice, no peace. Okay, so like that's a threat. You realize that, right? I mean, just because you're chanting it, thrown in with a couple of 2, 4, 6, 8s doesn't make it less of a threat. It's still a threat. No? By any means necessary. It leaves open your goal. Like, what exactly is the goal? Don't know. Just anti-fascism. And fascism is anything that we don't like, right? And any means, well, that's kind of any means, right? Anyway, they frame themselves as brave and heroic for silencing speech of people that they detested at the very birthplace of the campus free speech movement. This is according to Victoria Taft at PJ Media. It was the first round of the speech wars between people on the right who were trying to speak and those on the left who called them fascists while calling themselves anti-fascists and then using violence to literally shut everybody else up. Several people were arrested for the melee, but guess who were the only ones prosecuted? You are correct. It was the right. It were the righties, not the lefties. In an opinion issued in February, California, of all places, California Federal District Judge Cormac Carney stiff-armed the Department of Justice's Terrorism and Export Crimes Section out of Los Angeles. I've never heard of this. DOJ has got a TECS, the text, the Terrorism and Export Crimes Section. And the judge nailed the DOJ's section here for selective prosecution. The decision to dismantle the federal charges or dismiss the federal charges against two men who at some point became members of a group characterized as white supremacist was based on the fact that Antifa did as bad or worse on the day of the protests and at other events where both groups were represented, but Antifa was never prosecuted. And the judge said, quote, prosecuting only members of the far right and ignoring members of the far left leads to the troubling conclusion that the government believes it is permissible to physically assault and injure Trump supporters to silence speech. The judge denounced the riots, but said that the feds could not go after one group without going after another, especially if the other one is more violent. The judge said, quote, protecting First Amendment rights, however, is not always easy. People sometimes use their First Amendment rights to spread vitriolic and hateful ideas and beliefs. But he said, the higher purpose is the preservation of the First Amendment. The struggle of preserving the First Amendment in the face of speech many find dangerous is pronounced during times of uncertainty and division and polarization and fear. Challenges we unfortunately face today. But the answer cannot be for the government to single out and punish the speech that it and many in the country understandably find repugnant. Right? This is a big win by a federal trial judge whose reasoning is now on the record, and it now has to be dealt with if the feds appeal this case. People on the right are not asking for impunity, Victoria Taft says. They're not asking for impunity. They just want equal justice under the law. And this case is a huge step in that direction. And the people at Maine Justice may want to read and learn something from this opinion, she says. So, like, I don't know. I think this is a positive development. Jordan Boyd writing at thefederalist.com. Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson expressed skepticism during oral arguments yesterday at reining in the federal government's unconstitutional censorship pressure campaign because, quote, some might say that, by the way, whenever you hear somebody say that, you know, some say, especially reporters, journalists, journalismers, it means they say. It means they are saying this. Their friends are saying this. People that they like and whatever. It's, you know, I will say, look, the other side of the argument is this. The critics would say, your opponents would say this. But this idea that, like, some people say, well, who? Who are these some people? Who says that? Some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, she said. I mean, not like that. She didn't say it like that. I'm saying it like that. And she says that this duty would go far beyond simply posting its own speech or engaging in constitutional means of securing citizens from violence. Like, what if people die? By the way, completely unrelated story. TheHill.com. A new study on COVID-19 vaccines that looked at nearly 100 million vaccinated individuals affirmed that the vaccines previously observed links to increased risks for certain adverse effects, including myocarditis and Guillain-Barré syndrome. Well, I think she was a fitness expert. Wasn't she like a workout? Never mind. The researchers noted in their analysis that COVID-19 infections have consistently been found to be more likely to cause the conditions observed in the study than vaccinations, adding that factor should be considered when weighing the risk-to-benefit ratio of immunization. What does all of this mean? That there is, in fact, a link between the vaccines and some of these adverse effects. There is also a link between the adverse effects and COVID, but the idea that the vaccines would have, you know, no problems, like, right? You would get shut down on social media if you tried to say that. I worried when I was doing, at that time when the pandemic hit, I was doing my podcast, and I was very beholden. Well, I shouldn't say beholden, but I was worried that stuff that I put out in the form of a podcast could get demonetized. And as soon as that happened, I would have no income. I was very concerned about that. I wasn't ever big enough for them to come after me, you know, but they did go after others. These platforms shut down others based on, you know, double plus ungood thought crime. Jackson said, you seem to be suggesting that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that. Because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective. And you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems. The Louisiana Solicitor General, Benjamin Aguinaga, said he wasn't arguing for a complete ban on all interaction between the government and social media companies, but for that relationship to stay within constitutional bounds. So this is why people are concerned, like Benjamin Weingarten from Real Clear Investigations. He called it demoralization because the government's the states did not do a really effective job in their oral arguments yesterday. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.